This is 91.7 FM WHUS Stores. I am Peddlin' Ron, and you are listening to Bicycle Talk. It's February 5th, 2020. Welcome to Bicycle Talk with my friendly co-host, the lovely Dr. Fran Storch.
Hey.
A show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you have a comment or you'd like to contribute information to the show and you're listening live, you can call us right now at 860-486-9487, or you can email me at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. If you're listening to this on podcast, you can send an email to bicycletalk1@gmail.com, or you can visit and comment at Bicycle Talk on Facebook. You can also listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on WHUS.org, iTunes, or now on Spotify. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of the station. Starting with Ron's rant of the week. Okay, so we've talked about this before, but we're going to talk about it again because it relates to some things that are important. This comes from a website out of the Boston area called Bicycle Driving. It's not actually my own personal rant. It's actually theirs. And so the subject here is dooring is real. Yeah, we know what dooring is. Dooring is when you're riding your bicycle down the road and you're in a busy urban area and there are cars that are parallel parked along the side of the road and somebody decides to open their door up because they don't use the Dutch reach, which is another thing we can explore in a bit. And they just flip their door open, not thinking of the fact that there might be a cyclist coming up the road and the cyclist gets hit. And so therefore you have a dooring accident. So but the rant here is not necessarily as far as that goes. It's about putting bike lanes in the door zone. So if dooring is real, stop putting bike lanes in the door zone. That's what this is all about. Most of the crash data sources do not include crashes where a bicyclist comes in contact with the door of a parked motor vehicle because the crash type does not involve a motor vehicle in transport. Other sources show that dooring accounts for, and I just read this at another spot, anywhere from 12 to 27% of urban bicycle motor crashes, making it one of the most common types. It's actually on another list. I have it as the number one most common accident with a bicycle and a motorized vehicle is dooring. Isn't that crazy? So anyway, most design guides used in North America permit bike lanes to be installed within reach of the doors of parked cars. So by contrast, more recent guidelines for separated bike lanes and curbside parked cars require a buffer zone. So let's hear it for the urban engineers and planners that are actually taking a look at this and designing things now so that there is some space. But shared lane markings help to encourage bicyclists to ride away from the door zone. It can be used in place of bike lanes that are too close to parked cars. Okay, so here you have it. And I had this discussion with someone recently in a small town nearby, and they were talking about how, you know, they really thought that the shared, you know, that the bike lane, the separate bike lane is really going to be very safe, and they weren't real big on putting sharrows out in the middle of the road and, you know, encouraging cyclists to ride in the middle of the road. And I had this point of explanation to them. Because if you have a shared road that is open to both bicycles and also to motorized vehicles, what you're going to have is occasionally a motorized vehicle is going to come up behind a person on a bicycle and they're going to have to deal with getting around. Now, the deal is that if the cyclist rides by the standards of the League of American Bicyclists and they ride out in the road and in the lane of travel, because that is safe, they're not risking being doored by a motorized vehicle. On the argument side of this, the other argument side of this is, well, that bicycle is in my way. Well, if you were driving down the road and there were lots of parallel park cars in front of you and there was a car that was going to attempt a parallel park, would you not stop for that car so that they could park? It's the same thing. It really is. So, you know, you have to understand if there's parallel parking on the road, that you're not really supposed to be driving your motorized vehicle or even your bicycle through there at high speed. You know, you really should keep it down to the posted speed limit or below if you could, because things can happen. People can pull out with they can pull out of a parallel parking space, and they can pull out right in front of either a motorized vehicle or a self-propelled vehicle. So either way, it's definitely a thing. So anyway, the dooring thing. So if you are an urban planner and you are getting ready to put together a plan so that you can put a safe bicycle lane in your town, let's take a good solid look at this and make sure that you don't put your bike lane in the door zone. So anyway, that's my rant of the week as far as talking about a little bit more bicycle safety. Moving on to the positive side. The positive side is, what did you do last weekend, Fran? Did you do anything special?
Yes, I went to New Jersey.
Yeah, but did you, partake in watching anything on TV at all?
Only the halftime show. Because I listened to the thing on, because I was driving home during the event, so I listened to it on the radio. But I did watch the halftime show when I got home because it had been recorded for me. Thank you very much.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's kind of a big event. You know what else is a big event?
No.
In Dubendorf, Switzerland, it was the World Cyclocross Championships. And so anyway, there's some kind of cool, it was actually, I did watch both the men's and the women's race. The women's race was on Saturday and the men's race was on Sunday. And then there were other races in there too. There were UCI 23 races and other things. But anyway, the big takeaway here, I have a list of things that are on here that I thought would be interesting to see. First of all, the women's race. Bicycling Magazine listed as holy moly, that women's finish. Holy moly. So it was really an amazing race. There were three women who... From the Netherlands, of course, it's right there, who actually they opted to race in the elite women's race despite being eligible to race in the U23 race. This is Celine Del Carmen Alvarado of the Netherlands. She and her teammates, basically her country mates, I should say, they got away early and stayed away for the whole race. It was unbelievable. It came down to a sprint finish at the end. It was really cool. They had the day of choice as far as going fast on your bicycle went, because they had very dry conditions and there was a good hard pack on the course. And so the course was pretty good as far as that went. But this course was really interesting because it had some incredibly steep run-ups, very short but incredibly steep run-ups. And, when dry, you could maybe, if you were really talented, you might be able to ride. I don't think anybody could ride them. They were really steep. And they were long enough so that you just wouldn't have made it, unless you were some sort of a superhuman. But it was a really interesting race, and this young woman, Celine, who could have been in the U23 race, ended up winning the race, and she shocked the crowd with a sprint finish to victory against her Dutch compatriot, Anna-Marie Wurst. And it was amazing. They were just back and forth the whole time. It was really cool, fun to watch, and they just kept pushing the pace, and they ended up pushing it enough so that it really started separating the field out. Now, on top of that, and this is something that for all of you U.S. listeners, which I mainly have, it was Katie Compton. Katie Compton she started way back. She had a terrible start, and she eventually worked her way up to the point where she was vying for for third and fourth position. They were going back and forth there. So it was yet another race within the race. It was really cool. Katie ended up with a fourth place finish, which is pretty good considering that she got a little smoked at the Nationals here in the U.S. this year. And people were starting to think that, you know, it's Katie's done. You know, that's the end of Katie. She's had her day and all that. She went over to Europe and raced in a bunch of UCIs before the Worlds, and she was finishing, you know, top three, top two, top four in a lot of races. So, you know, give her credit. She's still around, 41 years old now, 40, 41 years old, and she's still at it. So that was fun to watch, too, because it looked like she was going to reel him back in, but she just eventually just didn't have the horsepower. These two youngsters had. Youngsters are tough. But, you know, it's the up-and-coming. It's what we're looking at. We see a lot of young riders coming into the sport right now. And even locally here, we're seeing a lot of young riders. We had a little conversation about that a couple days ago on the phone. I'll talk about that maybe a little bit later. So Katie Compton is still here. After her 15-year national championship streak came to a close, there was certainly a sense the American cyclocross was facing an end of an era. But then Compton pulled off a third place in the NAMA World Cup in January and finished fourth at the World Championship, shredding Dutch rider Yara Kastas. Oh boy, I can never say these names because there's J's in weird places. sorry. And British racer Evie Richards. So it's... you know, it was pretty much almost a solo effort. She just really, she worked her tail off to get there. But it was fun to watch. It was fun to see Katie out there doing that. So that was cool. The other thing, other takeaways on the World Championships, junior women make history, and Americans add another world's medalist. This year brought out the UCI's next step in creating equality between men's and women's racing with the addition of a junior women's field. The Sherwin van Andrush of the Netherlands took the win, and American Madigan Monroe finished with a bronze medal. Monroe is among a small handful of American racers who've been on the World Championship podium for cyclocross, and she joins those ranks alongside of riders like Jonathan Page, Katie Compton, Tim Johnson, and Ellen Noble. So big shout-out to the U.S. riders. And then, gee, this is a big surprise, all right? Matthew Vanderpoel, we've been talking about him a lot. I've been watching a lot of races. I watched him win a UCI World Cup race on a dry surface, pretty dry surface, but still lots of sand, lots and lots of sand. Instead of mud, it was sand. It was really difficult. And I watched him win that race, and he won it with, what did they say? He had four broken ribs, and this guy goes off and wins the race. He is superhuman. They, when they talked about his ribs, they said they just taped him up really good. I've broken ribs. I can tell, and recently even, I can tell you, it is not comfortable at all. You cannot breathe hard without severe pain. And this guy wins a race doing it. But anyway, he's all healed up by the looks of things. The interesting thing about the men's race, which was on Sunday, is it decided to rain, and the course just turned into a quagmire. It was really bad. Even Fran saw a little bit of that because she came home, and I was still watching the men's cross race, and she said, they're kind of dirty. It's like, yeah, they were very dirty. They were covered in mud, you know, muddy faces and the whole deal. Anyway, Matthew Vanderpoel, he rode away from the field. He had a big, big gap. No problem whatsoever there. Watching that race, and if you get a chance to watch it, I watched it on the Olympic Channel because we have the Olympic Channel now at our house. And if you get a chance to go back and look at it, you can look at it for a while. You can go back and watch it again. Watch how these people ride through these conditions. When you see these deep ruts of mud, and you can see the bike is just getting thrown side to side. I mean, the bike is going wherever the bike goes, and the person who's riding it is just on for the ride. But that's the whole key right there, too, is that you let the bike do what the bike has to do. And if you start fighting with the bike, that's the moment that you go down. But I was just amazed. And even these really, you know, hotshot riders who are really, really good and obviously in a class of their own, if they're finishing in the top 10 in the world, they there were a lot of dabs, a lot of feet down, a lot of corrections from problems that people ran into, a lot of, oops, I got to stop and get off and run because this is really not going to work. And I thought I committed to it, but I didn't get all the way through. There was a lot of that going on. There was a lot of running in this race. So if you want to be a world-class cyclocross racer, I would tell you right now, you might want to find get a running exercise into your training program. You'd probably need to do some running because these guys were running a lot. It was just really the course was just terrible. They were averaging, what did they say? They were averaging 21K. So they were averaging, about 12 miles an hour is what it came down to. 12 miles an hour on a world course is, I can tell you that the women were riding the day before and they were having faster times. They were riding faster than the men were riding on Sunday. It was just really slowed everybody down, and every single lap they were changing bikes. And, I talked to a friend of mine about that yesterday. We were talking. He said, so what's with all the bike changes? It didn't look like their bikes were bad. And I said, you got to carry that mud on that bike every single time you get off the bike. So if you got to carry it and you got a clean bike that doesn't have as much mud on it, it doesn't weigh as much. And he went, oh, my God, I never thought of that. Well, that's what it is. So the pit crews were incredibly busy. There was a lot of bike changes. Every single lap, you'd see somebody go through. I think it was a double pit, too. I assume almost all of them are now on these big courses. I know that's what we use on ours. So anyway, there was a lot of bike changing going on. But watching Matthew Vanderpoel ride through some of these unbelievable, difficult, muddy areas is just entertaining in itself. And he dabbed a lot. His foot would go off those pedals and he would dab out. And, and I don't blame him because there was some definite weird, weird stuff that made it difficult. But, I saw the course the day before and watched the women ride on it. I went, oh, this is not that big a deal. But then, when they opened it up to the men the next day and it was pouring out, it just changed everything. So it was pretty cool. There was an amazingly long set of stairs on this thing, too, that they had to run up, which was truly difficult. So there was a lot of running, a lot more running than I would have expected to see in a race like this. But anyway, the other big note that you might want to take note of here is the Belgians are starting to lose their dominant edge. Belgium is best known as the birthplace of cross, but it's given us some of the biggest and best racers in history, like Sven Nys. The Netherlands had always had impressive riders and plenty of world champions, but to have every single race dominated by Dutch riders is definitely noteworthy. So anyway, Vanderpoel is back. He was the world champion last year. He is still the world champion. And that basically, this is a fun guy to watch. I got to tell you, a whole lot of fun to watch. He's a lot of fun for sure. So if you haven't checked it out yet and you get a chance, take a look at the World Cyclocross Championships because there's some cool stuff there. And second thing on my list of on the positive side, and I have to mention this because we just brought it up earlier, that big event, that other big event that people like to watch on last weekend, early February, is the Super Bowl. And of course, the Super Bowl attracts a huge U.S. audience. So there's a lot of people that are watching it. So what's the takeaway with bicycles on this? Well, I'll tell you what it is. In case you missed it, there was a great ad with Bill Murray in it, and it was a Groundhog Day ad, and I don't know if you got a chance to see it or not. It's very funny, and there's this cute little groundhog that is, by the way, it was a trained groundhog. It's all true. He was a rescue, and Bill Murray was riding an e-bike, a big fat-tired e-bike with a groundhog. And he had it in a little basket. And yeah, had a little helmet on and the whole deal. It was very funny.
Well, they went on every day, you know, because the whole Groundhog Day is he keeps waking up again on Groundhog Day.
And the same thing happens.
And every day, it looks like I haven't seen the ad with sound. I'm watching it now on my phone without sound. But it's really adorable because every day he wakes up and he does something different and fun with the groundhog.
Right.
Like one day he goes for a bike ride. One day he takes him for a ride because it's a Jeep ad. He takes him for a ride in a Jeep.
Right.
Another day he takes him snowshoeing and he has the groundhog strapped to his front while he's snowshoeing. It's really cute.
It's very funny. And so one of those, for a few glorious seconds, viewers caught a glimpse of Murray riding Jeep's new e-bike, complete with a helmet.
Oh, it was a Jeep e-bike.
It was a Jeep e-bike, complete with a helmet-wearing groundhog in tow.
The groundhog had it. And the other thing is he went into the restaurant, and the groundhog is his emotional support animal. Has little emotional support animal.
I know.
Super cute. That I'm gonna have to watch
funny.
It with sound.
So it's predominantly a car commercial, but it's also our first look at the Jeep e-bike, which is set to be released in June of 2020. Fun fact: the commercial was filmed in the same location as the movie Woodstock, Illinois. So anyway, that's kind of a neat thing. We got, you know, anytime we get a bicycle out in front of the general public and in a very positive light, we always have to make note of that. So that's my other on the positive side is the Jeep e-bike. And I thought that was kind of a neat thing to bring up. Moving on to, let's see here. Oh, yeah, the maintenance minute. Okay. I always have little tips about, you know, how to work on your bike and how to take care of your drivetrain or how to, you know, just do basic things on your bike. And we've been through this a lot over the winter time. This is the time to take your bike apart. It's a good time to really take a good look. We've been through all that. I decided that this week the maintenance minute was going to be maintain that body. And it just may be the answer to longevity. So there is a rider, an Italian rider, and his name is David Rebellin, and he just signed a new contract, and a professional contract. He is 48 years old, all right? So in the famous Monty Python scene, I'm not dead yet, I think this definitely qualifies.
I think I'll go for a walk. Perhaps bike ride.
So David Rebellin will continue racing after signing a new contract at 48 years old. The Italian, who turned professional in 1992, had announced he planned to retire last season, but he has now re-signed with his existing team, the Meridiana Caman, for 2020. So his glowing history features 3 wins at Flèche Wallonne, a Liège Bastogne Liège, and 1 edition of Tirreno Adriatico, and a Paris Nice title. How about that? So this guy he's the real deal, and he's still racing, and he still has a professional contract at 48. So the maintenance minute, the shout out on the maintenance minute is you need to maintain your body too. Okay, and if you do, surprising results can happen. You can maintain a professional cycling career until you're 48 years old. This is unheard of. It doesn't really happen very often. So last April, he announced he had planned to leave the sport after 27 seasons, intending to retire after the Italian National Championships in June of 2019. But Rebellin was opted to sign another contract with the Italian-Croatian team, Meridian Kaman, after initially signing with the team partway through his last season. He started the 2019 season with the Allergian Sovac team, but due to a quote-unquote problem, there was a mutual agreement to terminate his contract. He has taken 60 victories over his long career, including the 2004 Liège, as well as an Amstel Gold Race and Flèche Wallonne in the same year. He also won the overall at the 2008 Paris-Nice. That's pretty cool. And in his home Grand Tour, the Giro d'Italia, he won the opening stage in 1996 and wore the pink jersey for 6 days. So, big shout out to somebody who his maintenance minute is take care of your body because it can help out. So, great Italian bike racer, signed another professional contract at 48 years of age. That's impressive. I thought that was noteworthy. So, anyway, that is my maintenance minute. So, we just had a little chat about this recently because in the show before my show, we're on with the Radio Naturopath, which is Fran's show, and she talked about the coronavirus. And I had mentioned last week, I had reported on the coronavirus could disrupt the industry travel and production because, you know, there's a lot of product that comes out of China, and so we have an issue there. But the big thing that's happening right now is the Taipei Bike Show is about to happen. And this just came out on February 2nd. Taipei cycle to continue despite coronavirus outbreak. Mainland Chinese are unwelcome and face masks are mandatory. So unwelcome. They're not letting anybody in from China. How do you put on the largest international trade show in the world? And this is a trade show that is, this show is where all the companies go to build the product for the following year. And so it's incredibly important. And when you look at most of the manufacturing is coming out of China, mainland China, and they're not invited to come to, they're not welcome to come to the Taipei show. That's kind of crazy. So next month's Taipei Cycle Show will be as scheduled, organizers announced, but visitors and exhibitors from mainland China will not be welcome. Organizers also said that all workers at the show will be required to wear face masks. The Taiwanese government and Taiwan's Center for Disease Control have already imposed strict precaution measures from airports to local public areas to prevent the epidemic. Thanks to the advanced medical system and contingency plans from the public and private sectors, the epidemic is well controlled in Taiwan, the show said in a letter to the media and event participants. Show organizers were expecting 1,100 exhibitors from 41 countries and 8,000 visitors from more than 100 countries. So this gives you an idea how big this thing is. As of Sunday, more than 14,000 people in China had been sickened in China, and 10 were sick in Taiwan, which is about the same as we have here, I think, in the U.S., about the same thing. At last week's QBP Frostbike event in Denver, several exhibitors said they were reconsidering attending the show because of the outbreak. Most U.S. brands have stopped sending employees to mainland China in compliance to with the U.S. government recommendations. So, moving on from that, we kick that out, and 2 days later, what comes out? Taiwan suppliers ask the trade show, the Taipei Cycle Show, to cancel the cycle show over the virus concerns. Cancel the show, all right? Taiwan-based exhibitors at the Taipei Cycling Show scheduled to open a month from Tuesday, and this was dated February 4th, yesterday, are circulating a petition asking organizers to cancel it because of the new coronavirus outbreak in China. As of Tuesday morning, Taiwan has confirmed 10 novel coronavirus infections in the country, one fewer than the number of cases confirmed here in the U.S. It's not known how many exhibitors, if any, have signed the petition or forwarded it to the Taiwan External Trade Development Council, that's TETRA, the show's organizer. Brain, this is from Bicycle Retail and Industry News, otherwise known as Brain, has reviewed a copy of the petition, which is written in Chinese. Three exhibitors told Brain they received it. Daniel Goodwin of the Taiwan Trade Center in Los Angeles told Brain the show will continue as planned. He shared a new statement from TETRA that said there is no danger posed to exhibitions and meeting venues in Taiwan. From the airport to the hotel to the venue and back, visitors can rest assured that they will be safe to visit Taiwan. Earlier Tuesday, a show representative referred a question about the virus to a statement that TETRA had released on Friday. The statement said the bike show would be held as scheduled, but visitors or exhibitors from China would not be allowed. Oh, boy, oh, boy, oh, boy. And the U.S. State Department, by the way, has no alerts regarding travel to Taiwan. So Taiwan is, quote unquote, safe. China is not. At the time of the writing, no new countries have reported cases of the virus in the last 24 hours, and there were only limited cases of infection in Taiwan and with zero deaths, and those with the illness are recovering well and in a stable and non-life-threatening condition. All events and activities for international visitors are conducted in full and stringent compliance with health and safety regulations, and there is no danger posed to exhibitions and meeting venues in Taiwan. Visitors can also be reassured that Taiwan's healthcare system and medical sector is one of the best in the world. Must not be here. With the highest standards for medical assistance and most advanced medical equipment and facilities. It still runs into that problem that no one can come here from China. And the inability of Chinese visitors to attend or exhibit at the show makes the event less attractive to visitors and exhibitors who typically meet with Chinese customers and vendors at the show. The U.S. State Department advises against visiting mainland China, and several U.S. suppliers tell Brain they are honoring that advisory. The State Department has no alerts regarding travel to Taiwan. However, many industry members typically visit Chinese factories and other facilities before or after the Taipei show. So the restriction makes Taipei trip a little less valuable. So if I look at the people that I know in the industry that have gone over there, primarily they're bike designers for big companies. That's a thing that they do. They either go before or after the show. They go over to the Chinese factories and they visit and see what's going on there and check in on the facilities, and it's a big deal. And so why would you send your personnel over there if they weren't able to utilize the entire trip? As because otherwise it's kind of a waste of money. So anyway, it's very, very unfortunate, but that's what's going on, and it's the coronavirus. You know what you need for the coronavirus? A nice lime, a slice of lime. Would that help?
You're so silly. Maybe a little bit, because it's vitamin C and bioflavonoids.
I knew it would trigger something from you.
Yeah, right.
I was looking for that response. Oh. So anyway, yeah, the coronavirus, it's hurting the bicycle industry. Other things that hurt the bicycle industry. Oh, gosh, here we go. And I did bring this thing. I thought I brought it up. Hang on here. Here we go. So we keep reporting on Bicycle Talk about the tariffs that are on bicycles and bicycle parts and helmets and all the things that are coming out of China. And the current administration, which was really, really strict about putting tariffs on all these things, they're just a bunch of windbags. I'm sorry. They're pulling back. pulling back, pulling back. This is good news. This is very good news for those of us who consume bicycles or who are purchasing bicycles in retail stores to, you know, to sell to retail customers. This is really good news. But the administration, this was as of February 3rd, 2020, the administration grants more tariff exclusions for bikes, tires, and trailers. So, you know, if you're going to do something, then do it. If you're not going to do something, then keep your mouth shut. I'm sorry. I'm going to make a little bit of a stance here about this. But, you know, it's like, don't scare everyone into the fact that they think that now they're not going to be able to own their retail store much longer because they're not going to be able to afford to sell anything. You're hurting small business in the United States when you do things like this. And I'm not saying it's anyone in particular that has done this, but we know who it is and we know what party he works with. And it's like, you know, there's a thing I can't say on the air, but I would like to say it. And it has something to do with a porta potty. But anyway, so the Trump administration has announced additional Chinese tariff exclusions for some bike-related products. The exclusions exempt importers from the 25% tariff imposed by the administration as part of the trade war with China. Importers can also request repayment for the tariffs they've previously paid. And I know that there were a lot of importers that were kind of eating the cost on the tariffs, and they were you know, they were not passing it on to their customers because of the shock of the whole thing. And I don't know how they could afford to do that, but I think that they probably knew that these guys are just a big bag of wind, and they you know, knew that it would just blow over and go away. But apparently now, if they have paid an import tariff, they can get their money back, which is good to know. So the new exclusions announced Friday apply to the imports of wire beaded tires weighing not more than 2.27 kilograms each. I don't know how much that is in pounds, but they're, you know, basic tires. Bikes with both wheel diameters exceeding 63.5 centimeters and a single gear in a coaster brake. Bikes with both wheels exceeding 63.5 centimeters in diameter, each having no more than 3 speeds and coaster brake. Wheeled trailer suitable for towing behind an adult bicycle, each comprising a frame of aluminum and with a hitch mechanism weighing not more than 17.5 kilograms with a capacity of not more than 46 kilograms with those trailers designated for carrying children meeting the ASTM international standard. The exclusions will expire on August 7th. Oh, how timely, just before elections. The bicycle exclusions were requested by Priority Outdoor Products and Huntington Beach Bicycle Company. The trailer exclusion was granted at the request of Burley, and yay, Burley. Shout out to my friends at Burley. I used to work with them. And the tire exclusion was at the request of Bell Sports. All importers of products meeting the descriptions are allowed the exclusions. In request for the exclusion, Bell Sports, which is owned by Vista Outdoor, said, "We have met and continue to meet vendors with factories in other countries, but none have a comparable technology to compete with our existing Chinese vendor at a price that is expected in the mass market. Another main reason is the availability of resources of natural rubber in China." In a request for exclusion, Burley noted that until 2007, the company manufactured all its trailers in Eugene, Oregon. Cost of manufacturing had become so prohibitive that Burley was nearing bankruptcy, which necessitated a move to offshore manufacturing, the company said. Quotes received in 2007 indicate that it was possible to receive a fully assembled box product into the Burley warehouse, freight from China included, for less than the cost of the raw materials needed to produce the trailer domestically. Woo! Ouch. Wow. Anyway, so this is good news for consumers and also people that are in the industry. We will not be penalized for having our product coming out of China, which is actually a good thing. That's definitely good. And, you know, the other thing is, I mean, that statement that Burley made about the fact that they can't purchase the raw materials for the product they're selling for the same amount of money or less money than what they're paying for a completed product to show up on their doorstep, including the shipping and handling to get it there. I mean, that's a pretty major difference as far as that goes. The question is, how are the Chinese doing it? The question is it internationally legal? The Europeans have been fighting this for years, and they have a lot of anti-dumping legislation in and exclusions. So Europe does not bring in nearly as much Chinese product as the rest of the world does, because they say that they're dumping product. They're selling it for less than what it costs them to make it. And they're not real happy about that. So they try to purchase most of their products from friendlier countries, we'll say. They're still Asian countries, but they're not China. So anyway, that's a little bit of news out there as far as what's happening with the tariffs. So I thought that would be fun to bring up. And after the tariffs, we go to... So what to do before and immediately after a driver of a motorized vehicle hits you. So this is kind of an interesting discussion. I thought it might be interesting to look at. And this is... you don't want to think about it, but, you know, it's always good to be prepared for something like this. You never want to really deal with this, but no one really wants to discuss death or serious injury. But unfortunately, if you ride a bike, you need to plan for that potential disaster. And the reality is that as cautious as we think we are, cyclists are always at risk due to someone else's negligence. So the moments after a crash, it's time to figure out things. And in many cases, it's, you know, you're just not thinking clearly at all. And, you know, because you've had a very traumatic experience, and now you're just completely unclear. And I will tell you that the officers that show up are not always on your side. So you have to be a little careful about this sort of thing. And there are some great sites out there that you can go to that will explain it a little bit more, because there are attorneys that specialize in bicycle cases. But you need to check your insurance coverage. You want to make sure that that you can protect yourself there. If you're hit by a driver, there's a decent chance you may be carrying only the minimum amount of liability insurance. In states like Florida, our favorite state, the minimum bodily injury limits are $10,000. Ours are in Connecticut are $100,000, I believe, and $300,000 is recommended, I do believe. That's amazing. Luckily, most auto insurance protects against uninsured and uninsured motorists, even if you're on a bicycle and not ensconced with your car. Uninsured motorist insurance also covers hit-and-run crashes, which are unfortunately all too common. If you're hit and the driver leaves you for dead, you won't have anyone to sue for damages, but at least your medical expenses and bills will be paid up to your limits. So check your insurance also to make sure that you have some, that you are covered in case someone is really negligent and ends up taking off after hitting you. I know that has happened to friends of mine. One who we visited in Florida a while back, actually. She was found on the side of the road in New Jersey. And a motorist found her, just saw her laying there on the side of the road. She was completely out, and, yeah, somebody had hit her and left her for dead. Great stuff, huh? So, anyway, another thing that is suggested here is to ride with a camera. We're going to start all keeping cameras on our bikes here real soon. I can see it happening. It's a crazy thing. So this particular person rides with a front and rear facing camera made by a company called Cyclique, I think. It doesn't prevent them from getting hit, but it does provide evidence for law enforcement if you need it. The other thing is, if you have been hit and you are dealing with a a motorist at the time, and you have the wherewithal to think about it and have a cell phone, put it on video and record what the conversation that you're having with the motorist and until the authorities get there. That would be a big, big thing. And that's why I've always said that the best weapon that was ever developed for cycling was the cell phone. It's a wonderful thing because it's much more immediate. And now that they, you know, you can get this wonderful video footage and you could just, you can really take matters in control. If an officer does not show up right away and, you know, you're waiting, but they've been informed and you're waiting, it's best to take that camera and walk around with it and just walk out the accident and record how it happened and just try to get that information correct and just have it recorded. So that's a good thing. So these are things, have your emergency contacts easily accessible. Got it right here on my wrist right now. You know, it's always good to have your little identification on your wrist. That's always a nice thing. Road IDs are great, but you could also have an information card and you can put it actually in you can actually put it in your little seat pack or something like that if you have one of those on your bike so that people can see it. If you want to get really crazy about it, I saw a friend of mine who rides in the city all the time, and he took all of his information and he laminated it onto the top tube of his bike so that if he was not able to speak with anyone, they would just look at the bike and there would be all the information. So it'd be right there. And here it is, have an action plan in place. So if you ride with others on a regular basis and you have a plan in place, if one or more of you are injured, consider writing it down and saving it with your emergency contact list. So what should be on it? If your friend was hit, immediately call 911 and give any needed emergency first aid. Take photos of the scene. Collect all the contact info of the potential witnesses. Once again, that cell phone is a valuable, valuable tool. Scan the area for any video cameras that might have captured footage of the incident. That's good. I hadn't thought of that part. When the police arrive, make sure to get the name and the contact information of the officers. Really, really important. Again, your cell phone can take a picture of their badge and their information. It's all right there. Jot down or type into your phone all the details of the accident while they're still fresh in your mind. And, you know, I would just use, I have a audio recording program in my phone, an app on my phone that I can do that with too. So that's another thing you can do. But I would just do it in conjunction with the video. I think I would just, you know, narrate the video as you're taking the video. And so remember that medical care can be prohibitively expensive. Don't let that stop you from asking for assistance. If the paramedics believe it's warranted, go to the hospital for further treatment and tests. Unfortunately, many cycling injuries are head injuries, and it's usually impossible to assess those at the scene. A head CT at a hospital can rule out any brain bleeding, bruising, or structural damage. If you've taken a blow to the head or lost consciousness, you should go to the hospital to rule out serious life-threatening injury. The same goes for any fractures or dislocations. So, and then, of course, there's, you know, damage to your bike. These folks here advise against talking to the driver's insurance company without having a lawyer or other advocate with you. Keep any broken bikes, parts, or helmets, as well as any clothing that was cut off at the hospital. Keep all your stuff. So that's what you do if you have a problem with a motorized vehicle. You want to just try to be as smart as you can about it, if you are able to be smart about it. Once again, my assessment of this with folks that I have known that have had an altercation with a motorized vehicle is that the law enforcement is definitely not on your side. And I don't know why, but I think that it's just they tend to side towards the driver of the automobile and tend to believe that the bicycle was doing something wrong, which is why they got hit. That's their immediate assumption. It is not correct, but it is an immediate assumption. So you want to make sure that you're prepared for that sort of thing, because it's not good. And then this is from a website called Bicycle Law. Yeah, bicyclelaw.com. And it's accident advice. They've got some really good accident advice here, all about bicycle accidents, things that you should do and be prepared for in case you have a car on bike collision. There's just a list of different things. So I would certainly take a look at that and go through it. But so while many attorneys are competent to handle general injury cases, make sure your attorney has an experience with, and I'm going to go down the list here, bicycle traffic laws, negotiating bicycle accident cases with insurance companies, trying bicycle accident cases in court, prevailing prejudice against cyclists by motorists and juries, the names and functions of all bicycle components, the speed bicycles travel, as well as braking and cornering, bicycle handling skills, techniques, and customs, how to get full replacement value property damage estimates for your bicycle, establishing the value of lost riding time, leading bicycle accident reconstruction experts, licensed forensic bicycle engineers, and establishing the value of permanent diminished riding ability. So these are things that, you know, if you have to call in an attorney, you want to make sure you find someone who totally specializes in this and knows their way around it. Chances are the reason they know their way around it is because they ride a bike and they get it. And I know a lot of attorneys that ride bikes. And so, you know, you want to find that one who is really thorough to help you out, because it's not just about replacing your baby bicycle, which you absolutely love and adore and cuddle with every night, Fran. It's also about taking care of yourself too. So, these are things that you need to pay attention to if you are riding a bicycle and you're having any issues with law enforcement. So I thought it was a good thing to bring up. I saw the article and I thought it looked good, and it's definitely something you want to look for. So let's see, what else do I have here? We're running out of time here. So we're going to have to wrap this thing up, actually, which is, it's sad, but anyway, it happens. So anyway, I do have a few events here that I have put in. There are a few things that are coming up. One thing I will tell you is that yesterday, last evening, I sat on the phone with all of the members of the Connecticut Cyclocross, series that we run here in Connecticut. Yeah, we're preparing for cyclocross in the fall already. So we went through and we talked all about that and what we're planning on doing for this year and how we can make our series even more inviting for people to come to. So that's pretty exciting. And I have an event date now coming up, and it will be the second Saturday in October. So yay, here we go. It's cyclocross time. So already starting the groundwork for cross, which is really cool. In the meantime, there are a few things going on regionally. In Framingham, Massachusetts, is the Framingham Brew Spin. You can find all these, by the way, on Bike Reg. February 22nd, you will see the CCAP Winter Swap Meet and Tag Sale in West Hartford. And I have already signed up. I am going to be there. So if you want to come meet Pedal and Ron, I will be there. Maybe I'll bring the computer and the fancy microphone, and we can record some stuff too while we're there. So there's another Framingham Brew Spin on March 7th, the 2020 Northeast Officials Symposium on March 14th through the 15th, and There's lots of good stuff coming up. So, and of course, we have moving on into May, and we'll be talking to Eric because he'll be here. We will have the 2020 New England Builders Ball in Boston, Mass. And I'm getting tweets from him almost daily about the new people that are coming to it. I think this was going to be the biggest one he's ever had. So it's kind of cool. I'm sure he'll be really excited when he comes on. And there's that he's working on, and then he's got some other stuff too. So we'll be talking to Eric real soon, and we'll bring him on the show and check that out and see what he's got for us. On March 15th through the 17th, 2020, Safe Streets for Everyone, the 21st Annual National Bike Summit in Arlington, Virginia and Washington, D.C. And then the other thing that I have on here, the 9th Annual Thread City Cyclers Century Ride, July 26, 2020. Come explore the roads that Pedal and Run and Fran ride on. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. My name is Pedal and Run. You've been listening to Bicycle Talk with my co-host, Fran Storch, a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you've been listening to this live or on podcast and you'd like to comment, you can send an email to bicycletalk1@gmail.com. You can also listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org, iTunes, or now on Spotify. If you have a comment or you'd like to contribute information to the show, or better yet, be on the show as a guest, send an email to bicycletalk1@gmail.com. This is Pedalin' Ron. Remember, keep the rubber side down and the wind at your back. Get out and ride your bike. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS Storrs.